We're at the Iowa Soybean Association Research Conference in Des Moines today. We're going to talk with Wayne Fredericks from Osage, Iowa, who is the president of the Iowa Soybean Association. And Wayne, you kicked off the conference this morning talking about your experiences with on-farm research, working with Environmental Program Services and also the On-Farm Network with ISA. And you've been doing this for, what, about 10 years or so, you said?
Yeah, my first trials, Ken, was in 2005, and I've been fully engaged ever since then. And as I mentioned in the opening session this morning, I think over that 10-year time frame, done 77 trials on my farm, you know, just looking at products, practices, different things that are available to use, try to enhance productivity and make us more efficient, and I've learned a lot.
Yeah, and you shared some of that this morning about what you've learned. Let's talk about cover crops, first of all. Now, you've used cover crops on your farm. What kind of results are you seeing?
We're into our fourth year of cover crops. We've learned what species works best up in northern Iowa. We've had the best luck with cereal rye. And currently, I plant ahead of all of my soybeans. Cereal rye, so it all goes in aerially into the corn in the previous fall, and that practice has been 100% success rate. I've tried seeding rye into soybeans ahead of corn. I've also tried radishes and oats and some other the what you call winter kill products into soybeans ahead of corn. But we're narrow row soybeans, and we put an emphasis on good quality soybean production, so we do have difficulty getting a good stand of a cover crop in that part of the rotation. So currently I'm concentrating on, you know, at least half my acres every year are seeded now into corn going into soybeans.
So, you know, you hear about challenges that the guys have with cover crops, and the message I've gotten over the years was you really have to stick with it. It's kind of a long-term deal before you're going to see the kind of results you want to see.
I would agree with that. What we're seeing right now is I haven't seen any negative yield effects in our system with the cover crops, but I haven't seen any huge yield benefits yet. So it's been kind of some marginal yield improvement there. So if I look at the last 5 years on average, I got about a net $25 an acre cost in that cover crop right now. My hopes is that, you know, in time and longer use of the cover crop is that we build up that soil quality and that soil health to a point that cover crop starts to pay back and to where it becomes less out-of-the-pocket cost for that practice. I'm also curious to see the results when we get into adverse weather, especially if we get into a drought situation. You know, what's the advantage of that enhanced organic matter, improved soil health that comes from this practice? I think maybe we're going to see the first implications of where this is going to shine.
So talk about some of the other revelations that have come out of your on-farm research. What are some of the key things you've learned?
Well, I know I can get by with planting less seed. We're saving money on reducing seed populations of both corn and soybeans. Trial work we've done showed that we had more than adequate seed out there, and actually we could get by with less, so we're going to save some money there. We know that managing an our farm starter works. We get more yield, and we get drier corn in the fall, and that added up together is beneficial. I consider we're no-tilling up in northern part of the state when we plant that corn, so it's a part of our program that works. We see benefits of understanding what appropriate nitrogen rates are. Basically we're at 150 pounds of applied N in a corn soybean rotation. We've experimented with 100 pounds of applied N, and we've experimented with 200 pounds of applied N, and we found out that both the lower and the upper extreme cost us money, and that's not been efficient, and that we're focused now pretty much at about the 150 on our farm. We found that to be the sweet spot on nitrogen.
So what kind of things are you looking at maybe going forward here that you'd like to check out?
Well, I always see, you know, new products that are being offered or new practices that are being offered, and I think one of the messages that I tried to get across this morning to the audience was that we want to continue to experiment and do trials on these products and practices. But I encourage producers to move cautiously and buy enough product to do a good replicated trial and see what the results are there first. Too many times we look at something that sounds too good to be true and we buy enough to cover our whole acreage, and then we leave a little spot to do a trial on, and we find out that maybe the practice didn't work at all or actually reduced yield. That's a tremendous cost that I think we can avoid if we approach it in the correct manner. So that's the biggest thing I've learned, is to start small, find out if it works, and if it's replicated by some of your neighbors as well, then you've got a practice that you can move ahead with confidence and make money. We don't have budgets with much room in this year, and so it's not where we're going to try every $5 or $10 an acre product that's out there in hopes of getting better yield without some proof.
Let me ask you too about the water quality, water management efforts that are going on, and we've talked about this in the past. Are you pleased with the progress being made?
I think we're getting the early adapters on really pretty easily, and I think that at many of our meetings you tend to be speaking to the choir a lot of times, but those very conservation-minded farmers are into this pretty heavily already. They've been doing cover crops now for some time. Many of them have adopted no-till and or strip-till and doing the nutrient management and those practices. They're starting to look at bioreactors and some of those edge-of-field practices in their point in their operations now, because they've already done this early stuff with the cover crops and so forth. But we have a large group of farmers yet that are still conventional tillage. That's what they've grown up with, what they know best. It's tradition. And in light of all of this new practices that are being brought forth to them to adopt, and in a climate of an economic difficulty budget-wise, we're up against this kind of, I call it a wall. It's an informational wall. It's a comfort zone wall that we need to establish. You know, how do we bring producers in that haven't done any of these type of practices before? How do we start them down the road to being successful? You know, the first thing you want to avoid is having a failure out there. As you recommend a producer, you know, try this cover crop, and if you don't sit there and work with them and pass the information along to how to be successful at that, that would be a failure on our part. So I think that's the point where we've come in this issue with the nutrient reduction strategy and water quality is informational. Now, how do we ramp up the information, enhance the comfort level of farmers so that they can try some of these practices? But we also are going to need funding, because these practices cost money. It might say cover crops is still a net cost practice for me. Hopefully in time we will be able to bring that towards a net neutral or a net benefit practice. But that's going to take time. In the meantime, though, it's pretty hard to ask a farmer to sit in front of his banker and ask for a loan to go out and put this on his land in this climate. It's a better discussion to have with the landowner. I think this is where we need to enhance the communication, is with the landowners, because they are the ultimate beneficiaries of these practices long term. And I think it's inherent for them to come to understand what the cost is involved with that, the benefits that they're going to achieve long-term on their land, and bring them into the conversation so that they're more willing to be negotiable on rental rates and so forth. Understanding that the farmer is going to have a higher cost to farm maybe in this environmentally sensitive way, which, like I say, going to benefit the landlord in the long run.
The governor's proposal, SAVE, water quality funding proposal, that's something that your organization supports?
Yes, we had a conference call with the governor, our board of directors did back in late December, and we came on board when he devised this program and decided we would support, you know, long-term funding, and we're supportive of this approach, and we supported IWIL as well, the 3/8 cents. So, you know, we see the need for long-term funding, and we see the need to be assured of a long-term funding source, because it's going to take a commitment for infrastructure. Just look at all the infrastructure that's going to be needed to put into practice, you know, the cover cropping and so forth. You're going to need a lot more aerial applicators and other applicators. You're going to need seed production. And without assurances that, you know, this is going to continue forward, and that's what long-term sustainable funding does. It gives assurances that there's going to be support for practices. You know, you kind of get up against a wall here. So I give the governor credit for being creative, and we're going to see how it goes through the legislative process. I understand the concerns from people in education. But I think once most of these people sit down and we really flesh out the details of the program, it appears to be a win-win for both sides, where I think we can share continued support for education, and we can also build support for long-term water quality.